Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires, and also supported this month of May by our friends at Bell Racing Helmets USA. I'm sitting here for this episode with a Bell athlete by the name of Jack Harvey. How are you this Wednesday morning at 8:30? Far too early.
Mate, I'm feeling great. Honestly, I got a little bit of seasonal allergy seems to be coming in and have got me a
so
little bit. But
you're squinting into turn one? You're doing one-eyed Jack into
turn
one?
No, I don't have time for squinting when you're going that fast.
Okay.
But no, I'm doing great, mate. I mean, honestly, it's what a place to get to go to work. We're in the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Amen to that. Well, we had your team owner, Michael Shank, on yesterday with the day at Indy, so we're trying to get the scourge of Meyer Shank Racing out early so we can get on to the real good characters. Now, I wanted to have you on for the week here, Jack, because I think your story, among many here, is one of the more interesting ones insofar that last year you were an Indy 500 rookie. You have been fortunate to add on a few more IndyCar races, road races leading up to your return here, but you're one of a relatively small, and I'm not even sure how many we have, as sophomores. What's it like for you, and this is the same thing I asked of Mike, what's it like coming back for your second year? How much smarter are you about knowing how things work? How much is still kind of hitting you like, holy cow, it's the Indy 500?
I mean, honestly, last year I know it was my first Indy 500, but I truly felt like a rookie. And I've said this to a few people. I understood what winning the 500 meant before I came to America. I did not understand what the month of May represented on a whole.
Got it.
So last year, you know, I hadn't done any testing. The deal came together, not super late, but late-ish.
Late enough.
You know, and I felt like I was thrown in the deep end in what is the biggest race, or one of the biggest races in the world, you know, let alone our season. It's one of the biggest races in the world. And then how everything played out, obviously with Ed Fernando coming to the team, you know, and like the media storm.
Never heard of him.
No, this is just some Spanish dude, really. And the media storm that came with it, and then actually that's how me and Michael even met each other. I'd never planned to do the 500 with him, and then Fernando came, then I got partnered with Michael, and again, it was already in the deep, and then a few things kind of changed. So honestly, we didn't really know what to expect, and that was what kind of made it fun. It made it a little bit too exciting, I think. But on the whole, though the month didn't start great, we actually recovered pretty well. You know, I would say everything that happened post qualifying was, you know, progress for us. And in the race, we were having a pretty good race. We were kind of gaining spots and kind of was running where we hoped we would have qualified. We had a pretty good pit stop. You know, we gained a few there. And then there was an accident in turn three. I hit some debris and that was kind of our race over. But I think coming back for my second year, just feel a little bit more calm, I think, honestly. A lot more confident. What was nice about my program with Michael this year is we've already done races together.
Yeah.
Not just for me, but all for the guys in the pit lane and the pit stops and the pit crew. Hopefully, they're just a little bit more fluid than what they were last year. So we're pretty hopeful we're going to have a good result.
Among the other things that I liked about your debut event last year was it was not without adversity.
Right? Yes.
And that might sound like a strange thing to say. Pruitt likes it when people have bad, you know, things happen to them. Not the case.
Character building, right?
Well, it's one thing if you come in with the top, most experienced team, have more or less a flawless month, you're drinking milk at the end of it. That's great. That's the dream.
Yeah.
But it's rarely the reality. What I appreciated about your month last year is you had mechanical problems, engine problems. You had a lot of things just almost immediately, very early on, where your resolve was being tested. Your your maturity was being tested, right? You could have flipped out and told everyone to go to where, you know, go to hell. How did those particular events, the things where you're like, man, I don't need this.
Sure.
How did dealing with those help you coming back?
This is going to sound awful to say, but I know how bad it can get here because I feel like we kind of experienced it last year, unfortunately. You know, like on day one, we had an issue with the steering column and I crashed on the exit of the pit lane in turn two. You know, we had a few other bits kind of, it was like something every day. And then Fast Friday, we had an engine blow up, so then we went into qualifying kind of blind. And that's what I mean. Everything that kind of happened in the race or our month was better after qualifying. So the Monday was good. Carb day was good. And then you're like, right, we've finally started to recover. We've got some momentum. The race was playing out well. Then you catch somebody's debris because of a crash that wasn't even anything to do with. And you're like, really? Like, really? That happened just now? I will say that the team were awesome. And, you know, I think that was where, you know, I'd followed Michael and his career and like what he had been achieving in sports car because he was always right at the front. It's hard not to follow him. And he was great in that moment. You know, I think on some of the things, apologetic for what happened, but wasn't really his fault either. You know, but he stuck by my side the whole time. So then when we started talking about this other program or like expanding the program, it just kind of made sense to try and want to do it with him, because if someone's there with you in the bad time, you certainly feel like it's going to be even better when you're having a good moment. So although it sounds terrible to say, I know how bad May can be, and I know how much better we're kind of all feeling as a team just because we're so much more prepared. So it definitely tested me, I think, tested me more than I wanted to be tested in a bad way. We can't get discouraged, mate, because this is a dream. And, you know, anybody would have traded me out at any moment last year in a heartbeat. And I think that was kind of what I really kept in mind, was that even though you're having a bad day, I was still having a bad day at the racetrack, doing the Indy 500. Yeah. I was like, really? Like,
well,
there's so many other things that, you know.
I'm laughing because I'm realizing that you could probably make a lot of money putting on seminars for some IndyCar drivers who, having completed 5, 10, 15 of these, have yet to realize that this is the height
of
privilege.
You know, isn't it?
Oh, you had a bad day driving in an IndyCar at the Indy 500. You
see
poor
how terrible
little
that
fella.
Sounds?
Well, I appreciate the fact that already at a young age you realize that, I mean, you know, fair enough, anybody trying to excel in their career or achieve their dreams, of course you're going to get upset and frustrated when things aren't going well. But it's one thing if you are, you know, emptying toilets
for sure,
for a living, and that isn't going well. It's another thing if you're here making money driving an Indy car. There are grades of frustration.
Well, I think that was it, and that's what I really kept in mind last year, that no matter how bad a day I was doing, I'd still said to someone, don't feel sorry for me. I'm having a bad day at the Indy 500, mate, you know, like let's keep this in check. And I would say my mum and dad are really grounded people, and they reminded me of that, you know, once or twice, which was you know, well needed, honestly.
Mom and Dad Harvey doing a good job. So today's podcast, supported by our friends at Bell Racing. If you are in town this month for the 500, be sure to stop by Bell's new location on Main Street. It's genuinely within, we could see it from here. It's just right around the corner, right down the road from IMS. So they are synonymous with safety, innovation, performance, and engineering excellence. And Bell is trusted by more champion drivers than any other brand. Jack Harvey is a Bell athlete. You are one of 19 drivers out of the 35 trusting Bell this month, so I am sure you've already been told to stop in there, get some additional merchandise, and you can check out their new facility again just down the road from IMS on Main Street. Let's shift to goals and accomplishments for the rest of this week. So Tuesday's opening day, little bit of a weird thing, three sessions. We usually don't have a structured, super structured open day, but you were able to get out, run some laps. Know that if we were to look purely at the timing and scoring, you would not have gone to bed completely happy.
No.
What do you do, having spoken with Michael Shank yesterday about what he's trying to orchestrate from on high, what do you do from the driver's side? Come in the morning, bring your engineers coffee and donuts, give them back rubs. What is it you're trying to do to build this coalition of speed, knowing that yesterday maybe didn't start off right there?
I think, honestly, the whole team is kind of wondering how we make that gel, not just with MSR, but also SPM. So I guess as a driver, I think my side is to try and execute to the best I can what we're trying to achieve. And you kind of come in the morning, I think you go to bed not super happy with obviously where we were yesterday. Our no toe times were actually were okay. You know, kind of, I think they put us like 13th yesterday, which is okay. And it's like I said to the guys last night, I'm not worried about like who just does the fastest speed. I'm worried about what my car feels like in traffic.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. My car didn't feel great in traffic, and honestly, none of the guys really had that.
Since you are one of 34, 35 human beings who knows what it's like to say how this 2018 Universal Aero kitted IndyCar feels like in traffic, describe or define what doesn't feel good in traffic, because most of us have never driven an IndyCar, much less know what a lack of happiness feels like at 230. What is that? What's it not doing that you want?
I think a lot of people have spoken about how the new car has less downforce.
And thank you for joining us while you're not feeling 100% here, mate.
A lot of people have discussed how the car's got less downforce. Honestly, it just feels like that. You know, to be going the speeds that we were going yesterday felt a lot harder than what it would have done relative last year, just because I think we just can't get as close to the people ahead as what we're used to.
Okay.
Yeah, we just can't get as close to where we wanted to be. It's very hard. I can kind of go through the corner as well, but I'm coming off the corner with too much understeer, which is really hurting my run down the main straight to try and make a pass. I mean, honestly, I think yesterday up and down the pit lane, although we were seeing some decent times, I didn't see too many people actually be able to make a big legitimate pass.
Okay.
I think, honestly, it feels like what people have said. It just feels like a lot less downforce. I think the car is as stable as last year. Maybe not quite as much off the corner, but I think that's just because it's new and we've still got a few bits to try and work out. I actually think qualifying is going to be really close because, I mean, there's not that much on this car that you can keep trimming.
Yeah, and we've spoken about that a little bit, but that's a perfect entree to that. So what you're saying is the car not being what you want and need, not so much, and again, we're just talking about day one here, but we're not so much talking about the fact that you can't drive the car, meaning it's so unstable or it's doing something, it's diabolical. What you're reporting to engineers is, hey, obviously I'm trying everything I can, but I've got, as you mentioned, say, too much exit understeer, so I'm losing speed from the apex of the corner on out, and that then hurts me all the way down to the next, you know, the long straight to the next corner. That's where I'm losing time. How can we cure some of that understeer? But to your point, we talk about this year in particular with this aero kit wanting to massively improve mechanical grip because there aren't as many aero bits and pieces you can bolt on and off to tune the car. This might be another kind of educational or explorational topic. Mechanical compliance. That might be something that I think some IndyCar and Indy 500 fans would say, well, wait a minute, isn't this kind of an aero game here, right? Isn't this a big aerodrome? What about the mechanical side? It's not like we're at the hairpin at Long Beach and you want to get, you know, good grip off of that at 30 miles an hour, but that's not the case.
No, because ultimately, this is what I've tried to explain to people. If your car has already got what we would say, you know, some downforce still in it where we haven't started trimming it, and you can feel a particular imbalance in the car, whether the rear is sliding around too much or whether the front is understeering too much. When you start trimming, all it does is just magnify those problems and make them more drastic. So, I mean, what we've typically spoken about is you can only start trimming once your mechanical balance is, you know, kind of whole, as I would say. Because if you've already got understeer and you take a bunch of downforce out, you're still going to have more understeer. Well, you're going to have the same amount of understeer, but going quicker, and that's not a great feeling to have in the car.
Here comes the wall.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we had yesterday. And the thing is, as you mentioned, there's not that much we can keep trimming off the car. So then the only way you can go quicker is by having a better mechanical car.
Yeah.
You know, because there's nothing left aero-wise to do. I mean, I think you're going to see everybody pretty much qualify at their max and then just work on their mechanical car. But I got to be honest, I think that's the same on the road courses this year. You know, I think the mechanical cars have been exposed a little bit more just because the way I look at downforce and aero sometimes is it can be a good band-aid to a problem you can sometimes cover it with aero.
If
well,
your
I think with this car, you
suspension
can't
settings aren't right, if your damping is off, if your springing is off, ride height and such, with a bunch of downforce, you could not as if teams aren't always trying to perfect every area, but there are ways where if your setup is off, and I'm, again, talking more 2017 and back, but if you weren't necessarily in that setup window, you could use aero to jump you into it more, but you're still, as to your point, kind of masking and covering an underlying problem. With this new aero kit, you don't have the ability to do that nearly like you would in the past. So if your mechanical game is off,
you're really scratching
your head.
You're just off, honestly, because, I mean, one of the things that we have speak about in the engineering is how we're working the tire. It's any contact we have with the track. So, you know, we talk about how you were working a tire, and last year you could put downforce in the car just to push it into the track, work it harder that way. This year we don't have a ton of downforce that we can just fix that problem
crush
with.
Crush that tire into the ground.
It kind of just exposes the fact that, oh, actually, we need another change in another area to fix that. So I think it's going to be interesting. I think our car on our own is pretty good, but some work to do in traffic running. And I think, honestly, I think we had a pretty good plan. I think today we're going to go and try and execute it better than yesterday.
I love it. Well, a couple of fun little random observations and a stupid story to share before we jump into a bunch of great Q&A that has come in for you, Jack. So after our first day of practice, just walking up and down pit lane, I must admit, I don't know how many of these things you've seen, because obviously you've been busy with your own, but our friends at Dryan Reinbold Racing with the cars for Jerry Hildebrand and Sage Karam, they've done something I haven't really seen in maybe, I don't know, ever or a long time. They've painted the floors on the cars.
Okay.
So on Sage's, you have that, I'm not sure what the color is, it's kind of a burnt orange yellowish to go with his livery. On JR's, it's this beautiful brighter orange. But it's just amazing how much the car pops in person and off track, because you have this fairly big surface, which is normally just carbon black. You almost don't notice it in photos, to now you have this big bright thing. I wonder how many people leaving May might think about that.
Yeah, it's funny, actually, because I said to the team, I mean, when I saw JR, because just where we're pitted, we have one of the, you know, telecast screens, and I was looking, I was like, his car really stands out.
Yeah.
You know, and I was looking at it, I was like, well, why is that really standing out? And it was the extra trim of orange along the bottom of the car. And I said to the team, I was like, why do they have that? And it was a case of, I don't think anybody really, I don't know, honestly. But I think it'll be interesting to see. I'm sure someone will do it. And then if you come back next year and everybody's doing it, you know it was good.
Well, knowing that I believe the aero folks that support Michael Shank Racing with all of your liveries and such, how's this? We know people who could wrap a floor beautifully.
If they wanted to try it, I think they could make it happen very quickly.
Now, what would be hilarious if you did do that and some of that started to come off and one of the people following you, just the entire car was covered in that wrap, they might not think that was funny, but visually that would be a meme immediately. Trying to think of a few other things that we've seen here. Derek Walker, former head of competition of IndyCar, former team manager, former IndyCar team owner, and sports car team owner. He's been drafted in as Takuma Sato's spotter.
I saw Derek yesterday, and I didn't know what he was doing. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and you called for security to get him
ejected,
hopefully.
Yeah, get out of
hopefully.
That British guy.
We've got Derek up, spotting, which is lovely, so I can't wait to see him and hurl obscenities at him. I saw Tim Keen, who's been a long-time team manager.
He called my race last year.
Absolutely. Saw him in a green GoDaddy shirt yesterday.
Yeah, he's calling Danica's race.
Yep. So he has joined that staff over there. One other funny little, again, I don't know if it's funny to anyone other than me, but I noticed on Scott Dixon's Chip Ganassi racing car sponsored by PNC Banks, well, they have decided to put the PNC sticker on the back of the rear tire ramps. So effectively, what, an inch and a half, 2 inches in front of the rear tire. So if you're looking from behind at the very top,
still
you can see the PNC.
Okay.
I can't wait to look at that this morning because part of me thinks with all the little rocks and everything else that gets thrown at the back of it,
yeah,
those stickers, A, aren't going to last very long. But I could be wrong. Who knows? But I saw that. I'm like,
now you've got a good eye for this. these little details. You know? Yeah,
look, I'm not thinking of my, you know, my brain is barely functioning as it is. I also loved, and if these things were on for the Indy GP, then I was truly blind. But I believe I saw on Alexander Rossi's car some nice stars added to the livery.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, I saw that on track, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, that's nice. Just Zach Veach is in a different livery.
Oh, my goodness. Zach's car. I love the look of the Ruoff-sponsored Andretti car for Carlos Munoz. Even that crazy red and black livery that James Davison has. Thankfully, there's a red car in the race. Altogether, I would say the Indy 500's livery game is about as sharp as I've seen it in quite some time.
I agree with you. I like, honestly, I know I'm biased. I like the whole SPM cars. I think that chrome looks good.
Yeah.
You know, from the gold to the red to the green to the pink looks good. I think JR's car looks pretty cool, honestly. I saw it on the TV yesterday, and I was like, "Oh, that's a good looking, race car."
I would say for those coming out here to the speedway, if you have a camera, you have any kind of, whether you're on pit lane or any zoom lens, this is a good year. I mean, there's just a lot of what I would say fairly pretty race cars.
Definitely.
Good spotting on the Zach Veach one as well. That one stands out quite heavily. So let me share my one. This might actually be the silliest thing that happens to me all month long. So we're sitting here in the media center, and normally there's a radio shoe. I always make up a new word or expression each podcast, Jack. There's a radio show or two that takes place here. Normally it's 4 or 5 rows away, which I'm guessing is probably 30 feet, 40 feet away. So it gets loud, but you can still think. And keep in mind, most of us are up here trying to type, trying to write. And I realize we're doing a podcast, of course, but we're trying to do this early enough before really anybody's in. Well, so Saturday night, we've got the GP. GP is over. And there's some sort, the radio show has been moved to our row down at the end. And understood, good, you know, fair enough. They have a job to do. Well, everyone's trying to write their race reports. And we start getting into some serious volume. And the host had a Volkswagen ad to read, right? Now, you might notice here, by the way, right next to my laptop, I have my iPhone, which sits on a little charging stand. So it's right in front of me. I can see if someone calls or texts. So the host is reading an ad. Hey, buy the new Volkswagen. It's going to make you better and faster, and people are going to like you more, and you're going to be sexier, and your whole world's going to change. Buy a Volkswagen. And it's just incredibly loud and annoying. I've been hearing this for hours, plus the PA system. Apparently, I reached my subconscious breaking point. I honestly didn't think to say this, but just, again, sitting here on my own, apparently I said this loud enough, I'm going to kill myself. Well,
wow.
Siri pops up at full volume and says, no, let me call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline.
Wow.
So hopefully, for those who are listening to that radio show Saturday night, if you heard Siri or you heard me crying laughing over here, you'll know exactly why, because apparently my phone thought I was about to kill myself. But then it also raised the question of, is this thing listening to us all the time, Jack?
I don't know.
It just popped. Yes.
I tell you what else I find a bit creepy with phones now is when it tells you like how far you are away from like your destination, and I'm like, how did you know that's where I was going? It's very creepy. I don't like it.
Just say hello to the CIA and FBI, and everything will be perfectly fine.
They're going to come and shut your podcast down now. They know you're on.
Well, the thing is they should have done that quite some time ago. So if
you're
anything,
safe.
I'm a little disappointed that they haven't done so. Last question, Jack, before we jump into Q&A. So this relationship you have with Mr. Meyer, who is now a co-owner of the Meyer Shank Racing Team, this relationship you have with Auto Nation. So Mr. Meyer is the CEO of Sirius XM. You also have an incredibly close relationship with Auto Nation. I'm not mentioning these things as a plug. I'm mentioning these because I'd love to hear about how a young driver like yourself has established such close relationships with two incredibly large businesses.
Sure.
That's not only is that rare, my man, that's something that just about every driver your age and experience level trying to come up in the sport wakes, like, can't sleep at night trying to think of how do I make a connection. You've got two of them. Are there any dirty secrets we should know about? How'd you pull this off?
Well, I met AutoNation on a bus from actually here, just after I won the Freedom in 2015, on the way to a charity gala. We just ended up getting chatting. I told them what I'd done and had a good day, and they were obviously happy for me. And then went to the charity auction, which was for Sam Schmidt.
Yeah.
And then anyway, he auctioned off my helmet, and then was just kind of looking for things to auction off. And anyway, he shouted me, and it's his charity gala. I looked up, and he kind of told me to come and see him. So I went up there, and as soon as I got on stage, they're like, "And now we're going to auction off Jack Harvey for date night." And I was like, "Oh, Sam, what are you doing to me, mate? Come on now." And
had I been there, had I known, I would have bid like mad just to make this the most uncomfortable thing ever.
It was, and then I see a hand go up, and I'm like, and I actually said to my mum, I was like, if no one starts to bid on me,
please,
I'll give you the money back. Just like, just please, someone bid on me. And anyway, it was AutoNation. It was Mark Cannon bid on me, and anyway, won date night, so he kept in a little bit of contact that way. And honestly, it just kind of. Conversation just kind of grew. I mean, Mark's is a big Patriots fan, so, you know, we have a lot of banter away from the track with NFL, and although I'm still new to it, it's probably my, you know, second sport outside of motorsport in America now.
Tom Brady and I from the same city, by the way.
Okay.
So, not that there's any linkage of quality or talent, but just wanted to share that.
So we had a lot of banter that way, and honestly, just kind of, that relationship just kept growing, really, which was great, and then so it was kind of a random story, but it was happening at the track, so I think it kind of, you know, makes sense-ish. How I met Jim was even, is a lot more random. There's a, you know, what feels like my second family, you know, outside of my own, you know, live in Carmel. They've looked after me now for, you know, since I've pretty much been in America.
Yeah.
Have followed my story, and they've known, you know, the good bits and the bad bits. And, you know, last year we were just trying to put some money together, honestly, to try and do the 500, and they were like, we want to help, and I was like, no, you know, don't. Raising money is awkward.
Yeah,
you know, I'm just gonna say to everybody, raising money is super awkward, and it's worse when your
friends could you please
want to
give
help
me
it.
Millions of dollars because I think I'm awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
That's an interesting mindset
it's very
to work from.
Awkward, and I don't like it, and I don't like doing it, but I feel like, you know, it's a necessary evil in our world at the minute, which, you know, is what it is. And anyway, they decided they wanted to do like a little bit of a fundraiser, and they did, and I was extremely grateful for it. And they threw a party for me. I went to the party just to say thank you to everybody and address everybody personally. And then just as I left, I said to Anne Boland, I was like, Anne, thank you so much for everything. If somebody's not here,
yeah,
who's put something in, please let me know, and I would, you know, I'll go out my way to find them, say thank you, and, you know, see if there's anything I can do for them, because basically all those people made this dream and this journey,
yeah,
you know, they contributed to making it happen. And this happened on a Wednesday, and I remember this as clear as day. I get a phone call from Anne late Thursday night, and she's like, I've got somebody you want to meet. And I was like, oh, I mean, you know, that was fast. You know, I didn't really expect you to get on it so quickly.
Sound like almost not a throwaway line, but you say it, but you'd not necessarily expecting it to come back to you.
I meant it. You know, I totally meant it. I just didn't expect it to come back that quickly.
Yeah.
And I love Anne. She's been so awesome since I've been here, and she, in a very nice way, you know, she comes from a, you know, strong Irish heritage. When she says, "Hey, I think this is a good idea," what that really means is, get yourself there. You know, I know what that means. I come from it from the UK. So then I was like, okay, well, where and when do you want to meet? And she's like, tomorrow night. And I'm like, Anne, okay, I know I said I would do it and I'm going to be there. I was like, but a little more than, like, you know, that heads up
last
would be
moment,
nice,
yeah,
which is fine. And I got it. And anyway, I went for dinner, and Jim was there as one of the guys who had put just a little bit into
Jim
this
Meyer
fund. So we chit-chatted a bit, And I had some pictures of the car, which I had been showing everybody, really, just, you know, and then show them, hey, that's where the logo is of the fund, you know, of the fund that people put together for me. And had no idea who Jim was, apart from he was just one of the guys who had put a little bit of money in. And he says to me, why don't you have anything on the side pods? And I was like, oh, it's because we don't really have a primary sponsor for the race yet.
Wow.
And he's like, oh, okay. He's like, what do you think that goes for? So because we were just chatting, I just kind of threw a number out there, which I thought was kind of fair, but probably underselling it a bit because I thought, honestly, I was with friends. And then he never mentioned it again. And then just before I was about to leave, because I had a few other bits and bobs on that night, he was like, do you want to come and get brunch with me tomorrow?
Wow.
And I was like, sure, okay, like, you know, that sounds fun. And
your dining, the quality of your dining is going up drastically in a short amount of time. Lunch, dinner.
And then, anyway, get to brunch. And again, I thought it was a nice thing to do. And I actually said to him, I was like, well, I'm going training at this time, so I'll meet you after. Had I have known who I was meeting, I would have skipped the gym that day. Just going to throw it out there.
Yeah, you smell like foot and ass there, Harvey. But come on, go ahead, sit down.
Go to brunch. I listen to the soccer channel on Sirius all the time because I've got to keep up to date with what's going on. Get to brunch. He's like right there. And we, you know, perfectly timed. And not in an arrogant way, not in a bad way at all. Jim, one of Jim's first lines to me is, he's like, do you know who I am? Do you know what I do? And when someone says that, sometimes there's an eerie confidence that comes with it. And you're like, why should I know what
Crap.
He does?
I should have studied up.
Yes. And I didn't. And I got there and I was like, look, mate, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm just going to fronted it head on. And I was like, no, Jim, I've got no idea, honestly. And he's like, oh, well, have you heard of Sirius XM? And I was like, yeah, I listen to the soccer channel, da, da, da. And he was like, oh, I'm glad someone listens to it. That's the first thing he says. And then he's like, oh, well, I'm the CEO. And I'm like, oh, okay. And honestly, I was like, well, how does this happen? Like, suddenly, I met him, now I'm going for brunch with him. I mean, that doesn't just happen. You know, I'm pretty lucky in that regard. And, you know, they came on board for Indy, had a great time with me, had a great time with Michael, which is then obviously what's led to, you know, Jim acquiring a part of, you know, what was just Michael Shank Racing, now is Maya Shank Racing. And what was nice, really, and this is what me and Michael have chatted about, and I personally am proud of this, is, you know, what came out of what was a bad month of May has really blossomed into something quite spectacular. And, you know, it's kind of nice to have been one of the people to kind of place all these people in one room. You know, so I've definitely been lucky, kind of right place at the right time with, you know, with, as you said, two major companies in North America. And then fortunate that they've can, you know, do some stuff together, which helps our program expand more and more. But even more so than that, enjoy working together. You know, Jim as a primary sponsor, you know, needs a good relationship with Michael, and, you know, never did anyone expect it would be so great that he wanted to come and do this as a team owner as well. So honestly, one of those ones that's a, you know, great story, and maybe one day we'll write it in a memoir, you know, of a funny story that happened. But
well, I don't want to, this isn't blowing smoke, this is just an honest recognition. You did not have a spectacular month of May last year. We've already discussed the issues part of the race and the race itself. You got caught out with debris. You know, if you were looking at cold, hard numbers, you could not say, oh, boy, we just killed the month of May.
No, we did
People
not.
Are going to be lining up to sponsor us in the future. If anything, average situation, you would probably, you know, you might have been concerned.
I was very concerned.
Did we do enough to retain their interest? But what I find interesting, where I think, again, this is just something for any younger drivers who might be listening, the personal services side, the, okay, boy, we tried to activate, we did our, you know, we did our best, but it didn't turn out well. I'm sure that AutoNation and SiriusXM got sponsorship inquiries from half the field, if not more, saying, aha, there's some meat on the bone to take. But the ability for you and Michael Shank and others within the team to really take care of those sponsors to say, okay, boy, we wanted to deliver you more on the track, but what can we continue to do that sure. might make you feel that you've gotten more than your money's worth?
Definitely.
That might be the biggest victory of all.
Seriously.
Instead of us coming back this year and seeing, oh, look at AutoNation on Joseph Newgarden's car.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Look, SiriusXM, yeah. it's on so-and-so's car.
I think, you know, I think me and Michael are both lucky because, honestly, I know how I felt after May last year. This was really, you know, my one shot, and, you know, I don't know if we necessarily blew it because I think some of the things that happened were kind of out of my control, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it was your fault or not your fault. The results don't lie. And I was pretty nervous, honestly. I thought that was going to be, like, the one race I got to do and I'd worked so hard to do, and it hadn't played out. So I think I was very lucky when they said, honestly, like, within the next week, before we even got to Detroit, they had said, okay, we want to do something towards the end of the year. You know, at Sonoma, we had a great time. You know, I think, honestly, they saw what we kind of had to overcome as a team, see what I had to overcome as a driver. And I think that spoke to them in terms of depth of character was, like, the word they used after. And, again, not just to me, but to Michael. And that's what I love about this is it very much feels like a partnership. You know, they like me, they like Michael. You know, and the fact that we can do it together, that's why really we put so much effort into making this program happen with him. You know, and from what was a bad month of May, and on the face value of it, not a good month of May last year, to be able to come out of it with a multi-year program in place, albeit not a full season, you know, but a multi-year program in place that's more than just the 500 every year.
You can build off of that.
You absolutely can build off of that. And I think, you know, both of us are lucky that we've got such great people behind us.
Mm.
So now we're going to just try and do our best to have a good month of May and then make sure that, you know, they're happy with what's happening off the track, but also, more importantly, what's happening on the track. So I think that's where the subtle shift, you know, it hasn't changed, but just, you know, now we know that kind generosity of saying, okay, well, we know the month didn't go great, but we're committed. We want to make sure we keep them committed for, you know, a long time to come in the future as well.
Amen. All right. Well, you are listening to the Week in IndyCar on the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires and supported this month by our friends at Bell Racing Helmets USA. Mr. Harvey, we have got about a half hour or so to jump through a bunch of great questions that have come in. One thing that we do each week as we prepare to kick off questions, our friends north of the border at TorontoMotorsports.com, the ones that do all the awesome little cartoons and such.
Okay.
They have been giving away Marshall Pruitt Podcast t-shirts and mugs to whomever happened to choose from last week's episode who asked the question that I happen to like the most. And I, you know, it's a little bit of a toss-up here. I think I'm going to go with David Zitterbarts, who asked, Jer, how do you keep in the racing mindset after going so long without a drive and just switch on at 227 miles an hour? I thought that was a great question, David, because, again, most of us are mortals. Most of us don't know what that is like. But it's
sure.
one of the things, that, though, if you just raced the Indy GP on Saturday at a high rate of speed and then climbed into your car here on Tuesday. It's another thing for JR where it'd been since September.
Mm.
So I really like that question, David. So send me a direct message with your email address, your mailing address, whether you'd like a shirt or mug. And if it's a shirt, tell me what size. If you tell me a mug, it's one size. So we've pretty much got that part all taken care of. But let's switch over to some Jack Harvey questions that have come in, and I'm going to save a couple of these for me maybe towards the end, but let's see. We're going to start off with Jordan Darwin, who asks, Jack, what differences can you see from the Shank team's point of view between last year's Andretti support and this year with Schmidt Peterson Motorsports?
I think right off the bat, and I think I mentioned this earlier when we were just chit-chatting, the thing that's nice about this year was a deal got done in December. We got the car, we were testing, we've done races already.
Purchased a new car.
Yes. So I think just that time together to work together, to understand how each team works and honestly how the team works as one, was an opportunity that we didn't get last year with Andretti. So I think the experience that we've had so far with SPM has been awesome. You know, there's no doubt about that. I think the partnership has worked out extremely well. I think we didn't have that same opportunity to give it a good go with Andretti. I mean, Michael owns this IndyCar. You know, although it's still at SPM after the 500, it's moving to Columbus with him. You know, but his guys have been able to work on it, you know, the whole off season and, you know, all year, where really when we were with Andretti, it was a case of this is your car for the month and good luck. You know, it was just a much different situation, and I know what a great team Andretti is. I think just the situations were so different and a little bit tougher because of that.
John Fulton says, I met Jack at the Mid-Ohio IMSA race. Great guy. Well, that's a bunch of garbage right there, John, but that's okay. Daniel Davidson, Jack, do you admit to your car being pink, or do you consider it tropical rose, like former entrant John Zink?
Tropical rose. I mean, tropical rose sounds kind of cool.
That sounds like
exotic.
That sounds like a really awesome girlfriend or wife.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm liking tropical rose, even though I don't really know what shade that is. But I like the name of it.
The name.
I like
works.
The name.
Look,
the name alone.
I would say you would be more manly if you said it was pink, because if you were confident enough in yourself to do that, there are a lot of men who wouldn't be. So
I gotta be honest. I think the car looks great. I really like it.
I can't argue. It's one of many that looks gorgeous. It's got a bunch of great questions here, and I'm maybe just centering in on some of the lighter-hearted ones, but as those of you know, those are the ones I tend to love the most. This comes in from Tim Same. It says, Jack, what would your wrestling alter ego be, and which current IndyCar driver would you have in a tag team wrestling match with you? WWE time.
Well, I know Sage used to be a great wrestler.
I think he still might
be. I think he still might dabble a little bit.
I wouldn't mess with him.
No, he looks like a guy. I would have. I know he's not racing this year, but I always feel like I would have liked Montoya to kind of be on my team.
Nut shots. That, I mean, he's not that tall, but boy, he would
kind of jab you when you weren't expecting it.
He'd be the heel. He'd be booed by everybody, and he'd love it. But what about you? What's that fantasy version of yourself that you know you would like to be or want people to think that you are? Because that's always the best wrestler.
When I was younger, and I think it transitioned from WWF to WWE, you know, me and my sister were big fans, and we were massive fans of Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yes. A man after my heart.
And I guess, I know, we used to love The Rock, you know, because he was the people's guy, the people's champion, things. But we always had a massive, you know, we always used to, like, pretend that we were Stone Cold. And when it was, like, we would used to, like, you know,
were you kids smashing like beer, you know, beer cans in your head?
Yeah, that would have been awesome. 12 years old, my mom was like, "What are you doing?" I saw Steve Cole do it. So we were just a massive fan of him. So he would be my go-to, my reference guy.
I
love the fact that he used to compete and then just like chug some beers and smash it on his head.
Oh, completely.
He was a man.
It tells me Vince McMahon better not walk around you because you're going to take that guy out. Or you could show up with a beer truck and just hose down a complete garage.
That'd be awesome. Maybe I'll do it to like the team at the end of the, like after the race on Sunday, just like
Shank would be a happy guy.
Oh, yeah, he'd be thrilled.
Let's see. Adam Klinger asks, Jack, what's it like being a rookie driver? Granted, we're a little bit past that phase, but no worries. What's it like being a rookie driver in a rookie team? Is there added pressure to perform and not make mistakes? Or is it more accepted that mistakes and that learning process will happen? Mm. And that's just part of the program at this stage of your career.
I think people understand that it's a part of the program. But in the same breath, I think at this level, even though you're a rookie, I think they'd still like to see you being that professional. You know, I think nothing could kill your career like crashing the cars, which, you know, I don't think typically I'm a crasher. I mean, throughout lights and throughout my whole career, I've not, you know, crashed a crashed a bunch. You know, we've had a few random things that have happened which have kind of led to some of those things. You know, like in St. Pete, we were having a good race and just had a tyre blow out, really, which was really odd, and that ended our race. But I think there is some added pressure on that because you're trying to perform as quickly as you can whilst not crashing, honestly, which I know everybody's doing that, but let me use an example. If Scott Dixon had a crash, you guys would shrug it off and go, oh, you know what, it was just whatever it was, you know. He never does that usually. It was just a one-time fluke thing. As a rookie, you do that, and quickly it's like he's a crasher.
Yeah, yeah.
And you come with that stigma and that, you know, kind of red X kind of next to your name.
Absolutely.
As a, you know, you can be super fast, but you crash. And I think that's the thing we're kind of trying to steer away from. I will say, I think that I know there's added pressure this year as a new team, because the reality is, if we had the full budget, we'd be doing the full season. So, you know, having a high crash damage year is, you know, puts us in a very dangerous and vulnerable spot for year two. So I think because of all those things, there are added pressure. I mean, ultimately, when I get out there on track, they want me to drive as quickly as I can and not do that.
Mm. I think that's a fairly common message to young drivers. Go out there, be excellent, be amazing.
Don't crash.
Don't damage anything.
Don't crash into your teammate either.
We have a question from Adam Smith. He says, with Carlin entering IndyCar and keeping a Formula 2 team, could we ever see a team successfully compete in both IndyCar and F1, or would it be too expensive? Well, I did happen to write, along with a few others, about how McLaren Racing is looking at a 2019 IndyCar program. They were here in small numbers last weekend for the Indy GP to meet with some teams to discuss the possibility of partnering with them to facilitate running that next year. And I do know that they are meant to come back in a larger form. Let's just say essentially all the senior brass turning up early in June, possibly at Detroit, to continue those meetings and see where those lead. I've been told, not on the record, but you know, a little bit of snooping around, that this has been portrayed as Andretti Autosport's deal to lose, meaning it's there. If you want to do it, let's do it.
Sure.
But if you don't, you know, if we don't do it with you, it's not because we don't, you know, McLaren wouldn't want to. So it's not putting undue pressure on Michael Andretti. It's just, instead of this being open flirtation with anybody in the paddock, it seems like there's a understood and specific area they'd like to go, having already worked with Andretti last year.
Sure.
But if that doesn't happen,
I think also their Aussie V8 team, right, is co-owned by
Michael Andretti, Zach Brown, his United Autosports, Ryan Walkinshaw, and then also Andretti Autosport is pretty significantly helpful on the infrastructure side when Zach Brown, who's the McLaren Racing Executive Director, when Zach's United Autosports LMP2 team comes over and races here in IMSA, North America, the Andretti Autosport team, whether it is transporters or personnel, really helps fill that in from the background too. So there's some pretty heavy linkage there.
Sure.
If anything, it would be awkward, I think, Jack, to see, you know, pick the team, Ganassi, Coyne, Rahal, Ed Carpenter, you know, doing that, not with Andretti, but, you know, look.
I think there's
free market.
I mean, it's absolutely free market, but I think it seems like they have so much in common as a, you know, as two teams.
I also just think that Zach and Michael are very much alike.
Yes. You know, and having seen that last year, you know, from when Fernando came to Barber for the first time and Zach was there with him and we had, you know, sat down and had dinner, and just the way May played out, if you're asking me, if they were to do it, it would make sense that it was with Andretti, because that relationship has started building already.
Although I do like the sound of McLaren Meyer Shank Racing.
I mean, that would be kind of cool.
Huh?
My car's hard enough to pronounce already with, you know, Autonation SiriusXM number 60, Honda powered. Meyer Shank Racing with Schmidt Peterson Motorsports. To throw another name into that mix?
Yeah, yes.
That would be a lot. We'd need to abbreviate that.
You guys, at least here for the 500, would need about 6 pit spots
for
all the lettering to get done for that. That's,
that'd be awesome.
That's a little bit different there. All right, Jordan Darwin, who always sends in a couple of questions, and they're always really, really good. He says, Marshall, what rear wing angles are being run right now? Positive angles, flat, or negative? I'm going to do a piece a little bit later this week. It might actually end up being more in video form on the majority of the tuning options available to teams front to back. IndyCar has mandated a maximum of positive 2 degrees on the rear wing and a minimum of negative 9. So they've actually said this is the range everyone can play with. You can't stray. As you know, Jack, it's one thing to say this is the maximum, this is the minimum. Doesn't mean that's where you necessarily venture. Now, with maybe auto manufacturer aero kits with the stock Dallara rear wing here in Speedway form, you would see some pretty significant negative numbers. I mean, the thing almost, you look at it go down the street, you're like, did someone not bolt that thing down properly? Because it looks like it's about to fall off.
Yeah.
Didn't have that so much during the manufacturer aero kit era again, because we had bespoke rear wings. But with this, in talking with some race engineer friends, I've heard that 0 degrees to negative 4 is about the comfort zone. You could trim beyond, go to negative 5, 6, 7, whatnot, but the actual gains, performance gains, are nigh. And if anything, you maybe start making the car want to do pretty little pirouettes.
Yes. I think that was, I mean, honestly, that was a range that we kind of ventured between yesterday. Some of our testing yesterday was just to try and data gather in those kind of particular areas.
Sure.
From what I asked before, you know, to go much less just becomes really inefficient.
Yep.
I think same the other way, really. So I think you're going to see a lot of people run between the numbers that you spoke about, working on their mechanical car, trying to free the car that way, because, and this was what was interesting, was, you know, like last year at this point, you know, the cars were still, you know, quite heavy on downforce, and then you did gradually build to your qualifying trim level, but for example, you wouldn't just jump straight to it because it would be a massive step. This year, we just don't have that level of options. So I think you're going to see some people going to get brave and, you know, go past that, but I think within your numbers there, you know, plus or minus one, I think either side is where I think you're going to see a lot of people. We see a lot of people run, but it's funny, when I first came here, I'd never ever experienced like negative downforce, like minus downforce, and I was like, "What did they're like? Huh? Oh, we're running at minus 4." I'm like, "Well, what does that mean?" And that was even in the lights car. And I was like, "What do you mean you're running with minus 4? Are you lifting me off the chat right now?" And they're like, "Yeah, kind of." And I'm like, "Huh." Okay, not sure about that. So it was an interesting concept, because I totally get why they do it. When I was in the lights, they're like, "Oh, we're going to like the most minus that we can go," which I think was minus 4, and I was like, "What do you mean we're going to minus 4? That's I'm all about plus downforce, mate. You know, what are you on about?"
The other interesting point, I'll write about this in a little bit more detail, is when we're talking about going to a negative number on the rear wing, that's obviously reducing downforce from the wing that the wing itself produces. But also keep in mind, the wings aren't that large. Mm. In other words, on their own, they don't make a lot of downforce. Therefore, there isn't a lot to take away if you start going negative, nose up.
Mm-hmm.
The correlating effect, though, to reduce downforce by going nose up isn't just taking away downforce from the wing itself. So with the nose of the wing pointed up at that negative 4 number, whatever it might be, the air hitting it is then being ramped downward as it goes beneath it. Well, the air as it's traveling and hitting it and going beneath is then effectively getting into the airstream coming out from the bottom of the car and from the diffuser,
mm-hmm.
and is essentially causing some of that air leaving the diffuser to detach from the diffuser. So it's kind of like a hose spraying downwards and pushing down another stream, and you start losing downforce there on the bottom of the car from the underside of the car. But it's not just downforce. When you're detaching air from that diffuser, that is drag, that is turbulence. So the efficiency side starts to go away. So that's where, honestly, when we talk about if someone were to run negative 9, mm-hmm. it wouldn't just be the wing element itself being inefficient. It's how it's affecting
the air. Whole combo, really.
Yeah. So it's everything, nothing happens in isolation.
No.
With IndyCar or any aero, to be honest. All right, well, let's speed through some more questions here, Jack, and then we got to get you off to an engineering meeting. Let's see. Kevin Frederico asks, hey, Jack, what are the chances of adding more rounds this year to your program, and do you think next year would be full-time for you?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, yes is what we're hoping for both of those answers, really. Certainly we'd like to add more races. If it's going to start getting to a point where we probably won't keep adding, we'll look at just throwing them on to next year. I know there's a couple of races that are kind of being thrown around, you know, as kind of ones that we would do, but honestly, it's time.
Daytona 500, Monaco Grand Prix,
yeah, that's it, yeah,
Bathurst,
yeah.
1000.
Le Mans.
Yes.
You know, I think it's just going to get to the point where, you know, we kind of draw a line under it and go, everything we get is going to go into next year. I don't know if you'll see us in a full-time program next year, but certainly we'd be just hoping we'd do more races. Full season would be obviously awesome, but I'm still pretty grateful for doing any of them, really. So it's just it's a work in progress, and everybody knows, you know, we're trying to expand and trying to grow, so hopefully we'll just keep doing that.
This is a great question that comes in from Joel Swain. Joel says, what are the differences between the work being done in pit lane compared to taking it back to the garage? And I'll throw that one to you, Jack.
Sure.
So we will watch on pit lane. We'll actually watch a lot of work taking place with the car, whether it is changing ride height by a flat or mm-hmm. two, could be a front or rear wing change. We'll see spring changes.
Yep.
We'll see damper changes. We'll occasionally see camber changes, since those are shims that are used and very, you know, quantified. But there is a bit of a tipping point of, we need to actually go back to the setup pad.
Yes.
Because some of what we're adjusting and tweaking could
sure.
have us in a not good zone. What's that tipping point, though?
I think the tipping point typically would be if you're having a big swing, cambers, toes, roll centers. I think that's kind of where the big ones. You can make anything that you can do quickly in pit lane that isn't going to, I mean, any change always affects like another part of the car, but when you start to do it in a significant way,
yeah.
that's when we typically go back to the pad. So
because you want to make sure you're
you want to make sure you're still where you're expecting to be,
your ride heights are all spot on, your corner weights, not just corner weights but also any cross weights are where you
yep.
want them to be. Your anti-roll bars are not particularly bound. And, you know, you want to make sure that everything is as mechanically sound and happy and loose as possible. But also, at a place like this, maybe compared to a Detroit, your setup numbers, I want 4th out of this and
yes.
a such and such of that.
It's so
you have to really hit those, you know, aero perfect here.
Yes, the precision for the mechanics this month, I think on any oval, but I think particularly here, is so high, because it's very much like a barnacle effect. Just a few tiny things make a big difference, and I'm sure as everybody saw yesterday, even though it was opening day, the times are so close. So if something's just off a little bit and it affects this and then it affects something else, and then the engineer was like, well, that shouldn't be happening because this should be there, and you know, you kind of start going around in a very quick circle. But I think for the general feeling for us is that it's if we can do it in pit lane without affecting something else too drastically, then we can make the change in pit lane. If it's going to be a big swing at something, we have to go back to the pad to make sure that everything is where it's meant to be.
Wow. All right. Well, Jordan Darwin, you're just throwing in a bunch of great questions here. And this one says, MP, any favorite reporting flub stories? He says, now this is great because it did occur to me that
what
I made
a flub?
That a mistake or an error.
Ah, okay.
This did occur to me, Jordan, but mind you, it was about 24 hours later. He said, I liked on the Indy GP racer, the race report video, where I mentioned that I heard Ryan Hunter-Reay running down a cylinder, but mistakenly stated that he was running on 7 cylinders. Now, granted, that would have been interesting if an extra cylinder had appeared.
That would have been.
But yeah, I had it in my head for some reason. It was an 8-cylinder running on 7 instead of a 6-cylinder running on 5. You know, Jordan, I would say the one thing, and I've become, I think, critical enough of it now to where it almost doesn't happen, maybe once a year. But there was a good stretch for a couple years where I swear to God, man, every time I was writing something about Road America, I would write Road Atlanta. And then when I would be at Road Atlanta, I would write Road America. I don't know. Maybe I just need to choose one and stick with it. And it's up to them to change their name when I'm there just to help me.
Leave it vague, so then you're not wrong, because either way, I did mean that. No, I didn't mean that.
Hey, here we are at the motor racing track with the Grand Prix of competition
with just one
cars.
Of the drivers.
Yes. This is Rick Nifty, Ace race car driver. So that's one of many, Jordan. I embrace the fact that I am an incredibly flawed human being. So hopefully those flaws aren't too annoying for some of you. All right, Jack, let's pick a few more here before we have to ship you down the road. Another one. I think folks kind of get your personality based on the questions we've gotten in. You are extremely good at what you do, but you don't take yourself incredibly seriously.
Okay.
Adrian Rickard says, Jack, you are Han Solo. You are Han Solo. Who in the IndyCar paddock would you make? Would you use to make up your crew in the Millennium Falcon? Huh?
Wow, what a question. I love it.
I mean, well, first of all, who's your Chewbacca? If I could offer a suggestion, I'm thinking Steph Wilson might already. He just needs the shaggy suit, but that tall bastard.
He's so tall.
Yeah, I think you
he's
got.
He's so tall.
I don't know if he can do the sound, but I think Steph might be your Chewy.
It's so funny when I stand next to Steph because I literally look into his armpit. That's how tall he is.
Let's see. I'm trying to think. C-3PO, that kind of stately. I mean, obviously you're from the UK, but you're one of the normal folks from the aisle.
Trying to think.
Would C-3PO? I'm thinking Max Chilton. You know, a little bit of a blue blood there.
Yeah, Max comes from a slightly posher part of the UK than I'm from. He's a little better. Well, a little bit more Queen's English spoken. The me.
Now, let's see. R2-D2, right? A language.
Kind of funny and goofy.
Yeah, but also a language that no one really understands, but folks seem to understand.
Could be willpower.
I was almost leaning in Carlos Munoz, right? I love Carlos, but even Carlos doesn't understand what he says in Spanish or English. So it's not a, you know, it's not limited to one. Who else are we missing? We had Princess Leia on there. We had Luke Skywalker on there. Who would be Luke? Who would be Luke Skywalker?
Who would be Luke Skywalker?
And don't say yourself, because I'll punch you in the nose.
I'm already Han Solo.
Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah.
Luke Skywalker. I feel like Joseph. I feel like Joseph would be Luke Skywalker.
That is
But me and Joseph have this thing where he looks like a fanny pack wearer. So maybe he's not Luke Skywalker. He looks like a guy who's going to wear
fanny pack wearer. Oh my.
Don't you think so? I don't know why we have that. I don't even know where this came from, but we've had this joke back and forth all year, and he'd be like Luke Skywalker with a fanny pack.
How's this? I think there must be footage of a young Joseph Newgarden at like 12 years old with the family at the park for a barbecue wearing a fanny pack.
Yeah.
Got his little hair gel in there. Got his little teeth whitening strips.
That's right. Got that good hair.
Yeah. There's little handy wipes, something. Yeah, I think there's
a lot of Luke Skywalker there.
What about Princess Leia? And I guess it wouldn't necessarily have to be a driver.
Who acts like a princess?
Well, there is Princess Sparkle Pony, also known as Danica Patrick.
Oh, I didn't know who Princess Sparkle Pony was.
Well,
for a
I think
there.
that was a nickname that our boy Tommy Kendall gave her years ago.
Danica can come and join the team, sure.
So,
who's like a diva? But kind of strong. Cause Princess Leia is kind of, she has some diva qualities, but she's not like a diva the whole film.
No,
ends up being like a severe badass by the end.
Yeah, but I think we might have struck upon the perfect, the perfect. All right, so Jack Harvey's Millennium Falcon with him as Han Solo would have Stephen Wilson as Chewbacca.
So tall.
Max Chilton as C-3PO. Did we decide on who would be R2-D2, whether it was Power or Munoz? I think Power, because he is a little cartoonish.
He's got some good one-liners. I've spoken to him so far. He's got some good one-liners that kind of catch you off guard, and you either laugh or just look at him like, what did you say there?
We've got Danica Patrick as Princess Leia and Joseph Newgarden
as Luke Skywalker.
That is an amazing...
I love that we got a Star Wars question. I mean, people clearly reading my Twitter bio.
Clearly. All right, my friend. Well, let's... I don't know if we should pick one more question or if that's kind of the perfect closer.
I mean, that's a strong closer to me.
All right. I can't argue with that at all. I cannot argue. Well, Jack Harvey, thank you for joining me on the Week in IndyCar, the Marshall Group podcast, presented by Cooper Tires and supported this month by Bell Racing Helmets USA.